Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Jetta Cameron, John Ritchie, 94 WIP. It is always our pleasure on Wednesday afternoons around this time to welcome to the studio. Is John Ritchie not a Hall of Famer? Jetta Cameron, certainly not a Hall of Famer. And James Seltzer, not even a big leaguer. But someone, I'm just joking. James, every time's yours caller better know. I'm just joking when I say that.
I laughed when you said it.
There's truth in jest.
But there is a true Hall of Famer in the studio. He is the great Hall of Famer, Mr. Ray Dininger, brought to us by Pizzadelphia, Philly's first citywide pizza fest with over 30 culinary experts like Zavino, Pizzeria Vetri, and Spatino. Pizzadelphia is on July the 14th. That's this Saturday at the Navy Yard. For tickets, visit PizzadelphiaFest.com, the Hall of Famer himself, Mr. Ray Dininger. Ray Diddy, how are you, sir?
Hello, guys. We actually had, when I was in studio with John Johnson on Sunday, we had one of the pizza guys dropped into studio with us.
Can I say something?
Vegan pizza.
Yeah. Well, that wouldn't be my personal choice, but I would just like to say this.
Yeah.
I noticed this morning, John, you may have noticed as well, Angelo, you know, some pizza around here. Ray, this is the second time now, the second time you've come on the show and indicated weekend pizza, associated at Pizzadelphia Pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice a lack, frankly, of pizza for us here in what is the lunchtime time of the day.
There were boxes out there.
And they were? What word?
I opened the boxes with so much eager anticipation.
Empty boxes.
Yeah. There were some crumbs.
Ray, are we not loved around here at all? I mean, what's the deal? We are.
You make
2017 Eagles.
You make a valid point. You make a valid point.
We're the Eagles before the season started. All right, Ray. Ray, let's get to it because we're hungry dogs. By the way, we'll try to run fast. All right, Ray. Amongst other things, John and I talking today, and again, phone line's still open, 888-729-9494. Curious your sense of the national perception of the Eagles. You know, we saw this one article, CBS Sportsline. Or CBSSports.com. I don't want to get too riled up about one individual thing. There's going to be a lot of opinions, pro, con, Eagles, whatever. But I thought it was nonsense. This writer had the Eagles as one of the five most likely teams that made the playoffs last year to miss the playoffs this year. I think it's nonsense. It's his opinion, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think my sense is that there's not enough recognition of the Eagles thing continuing for a few more years here. And that they're well set up to go on a run. Doesn't mean they win another Super Bowl.
Right.
But they are squarely in the conversation for the next couple of years to be a very outstanding NFL team. And my sense is that the national thing I hear doesn't speak to that. Do you agree with that or no? Like, where do you come down on how you perceive what people nationally are saying?
I agree with that. I mean, I've just been, I've seen three of the preseason magazines that always come out this time of the year. And I've only seen three of them. I guess there are more to come. But none of them have picked the Eagles to even go back to the Super Bowl, much less win it. They have all picked them to win the East, but none of them have picked them to return to the Super Bowl. Two of them picked the Rams out of the NFC. One of them picked the Vikings. Interestingly enough, two picked the Steelers, and only one picked the Patriots. I guess nobody wants to pick the Patriots because it seems too obvious. So they're trying to go a little far afield. But to this point, I mean, of the three magazines, if you consider that a sampling, there isn't any of them that are picking the Eagles to go back to the Super Bowl. And I think, you and I've had this, we've all had this discussion before. I actually think that's a good thing for this team, considering the sort of chip on the shoulder attitude that they had last year, the fact that they didn't feel like they got any respect, hearkening back to Jason Kelce's speech.
Yep.
You know, nobody likes us, we don't care. Well, guess what? You know, that feeling's still out there. And you know, maybe these guys can ride it again a little bit. Now, most defending Super Bowl champions don't have that luxury, but they may. And I think that as you get closer to the season, now we don't know what's going to happen in the preseason. I mean, teams could lose players, quarterbacks could go down. the landscape could change a lot between now and September. But assuming that everybody stays healthy, I really do have a feeling that when you look on the eve of the start of the regular season and you start seeing all the pundits weighing in, I don't think there's going to be an enormous groundswell of picking the Eagles to repeat, even in the NFC, much less win the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's faulty, John. I just think it's misguided. I really do.
How much of that stems from the NFC being so good in most people's perception? I mean, you mentioned the Vikings. You mentioned the Rams. The Falcons are scary to me.
Falcons are good.
And certainly the Saints as well. I mean, their defense so much improved. And now with the running game, Drew Brees, you can't ever count him out. How much is the strength of the NFC and how much is people not believing in a team that I think we know more about than a lot of the people, the pundits who are making these assessments?
Yeah, I think it's both of those things. But you can't discount the first thing you mentioned, which is the strength of the NFC. I mean, the NFC to me is much stronger than the AFC. Much.
Undoubtedly.
And I said, Glenn and I were having this conversation a couple weeks ago. I said, try and tell me a bad team in the NFC. Like a team in the NFC that you just say, they stink. I don't know if there is one.
Wow.
I mean, you look in the AFC, a couple of them jump right out at you. But in the NFC, I mean, who would you consider in the NFC a pushover? I don't know. I mean, Arizona maybe, I guess, is in a rebuilding phase, but I don't know if they're terrible. You know, Washington, I think, probably right now I would pick them fourth out of four in the East. But, I mean, Washington's going to be, they're going to be what they always are. They're going to be a team that could win seven games or so. Even, and Tampa Bay.
Alex Smith is being really counted out.
Alex Smith is a solid NFL player. He's not great, but he's certainly not terrible. He's a solid player.
I think
he'll
do more than people expect.
I kind of agree with you.
Yeah,
I think the Redskins are going to be better than people think. But people's perception is that the Redskins are always 7-9. But I think they have a chance to be better.
But even
than
7-9 isn't.
No, it's not awful.
It's not terrible.
I mean, you're not talking about what the Cleveland Browns have been or what the Jets have been. You know, there isn't that team in the NFC. Now, you could say possibly Tampa Bay could wind up being that team depending on what happens with Jameis Winston.
Right.
I don't know. But if you look around, I mean, the NFC is really good. I mean, I don't think there are any real weak sisters in the NFC, unless possibly I know people are saying that Arizona is going to be terrible. Well, I don't think they're going to be great, but I think they're going to be better than a lot of what's over in the others' conference.
Well, you said something interesting also, Ray, amongst other things, that you wonder if people nationally still know enough about the Eagles. Like, John and I saw a listing the other day of the 32 NFL teams' backfields ranked.
Mm-hmm.
And this listing from ESPN.com, by the way, had the Philadelphia Eagles backfield, meaning just the running backs and I guess fullback if a team has a fullback, had the Eagles 18th out of 32 NFL teams for the running back position. And I'm thinking, wait a minute here. That to me, that spoke to one thing almost entirely. The world has no idea how good Corey Clement is.
Right.
Because the world knows J.J. is pretty good. I mean, the people aren't.
But they don't have faith that he can carry the load.
Perhaps not.
And I think he's going to. Well, and this is something we can get into. Yeah. I think Jay Ajayi is going to have a significantly larger, section of the pie in that backfield this year than people allow.
I actually think that they will still pick their spots because the goal is about February and trying to get the guy there. And I could see the
frustrates
Eagles.
Me.
Well, listen,
it's got to frustrate him.
Maybe it does, but if he touches the ball, if you're in a close game and you got to rely on the guy and it's got to be 19 carries instead of 13, maybe you have those games. But if you can have your games or he carries, I guess part of it is I believe in Corey Clement. So if Ajayi is 13 and Corey Clement is 11 carries, I don't see an issue with that. That's how much I believe in Corey Clement. John, you said something, right?
I love Clement, too.
Right. John said something, the rare, poignant comment from Richie here a couple weeks ago. Where you can play laugh track there, Seltzer, where someone had brought up Corey Clement, and John said something to the effect of, what can he do?
Yeah.
And I was like, I agree. Like, people that underestimate him act like for some reason he's going to fall. Now, I'm not saying locally. It's like John's like, what doesn't he do? Well, he does. Like, so, Ray, I'm a believer in that guy. I'm a believer in this backfield, and I'm a believer that anybody in the world that has the Eagles 18th out of 32 NFL teams in backfield doesn't know what they're talking about.
I would certainly agree with your statement that they deserve to be higher than that. I mean, what that tells you is they don't believe in Jay Ajayi's ability to make it through a full season. Mm-hmm. They haven't really seen enough to have a good handle on what Corey Clement is, and they don't believe that Darren Sproles at his age coming off an injury can be a factor. I don't know that I agree with any of that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think Ajayi can play a bigger role. I certainly have seen enough of Corey Clement to think that he's a legit player who's going to contribute on a weekly basis, and I think Sproles is going to come back. So my view of it, and, you know, John just said it a moment ago, we're closer to the situation, so I think we have a better – sometimes if you're too close to the situation, you get a skewed view
yep.
of what a team is, to the positive, and you're unrealistic in thinking that they're a lot better than they are. I kind of think it's almost the reverse with this team. You know, I think the national perception is a little bit lower, and those of us that are here that have seen this, for example, have gotten some idea of what Corey Clement is and can be. I think we have a much better idea and a more on-point idea of what he can be. I think Clement is this goes back to a lot of people's minds. A lot of people are still looking at him as the guy who wasn't drafted. And,
yeah.
they're looking and saying, well, yeah, how good could he be? I mean, he wasn't even drafted, for God's sakes. And I know what the scouting report was on. They didn't think he had enough speed. Well, to me, he's got plenty of speed. I mean, he's not Chris Johnson fast. I mean, he's not a 4.2 guy, but he gets what's there. And the way they use him, I think he can be very productive. And the thing that I really, really like about him, and Mike Quick and I had this conversation way back in training camp when he was just, it was a couple weeks into camp, and we were talking about how's the running back thing going to shake out. And I said, you know, I really like Corey Clement. And the question was, are they going to keep him? Because Pumphrey was still in the mix at
and
that
Smallwood
point.
And all those guys.
And Smallwood and all those guys. And I'm saying every time I watch practice, you know, the guy that looks the best to me is Clement. And Quick said, don't worry about it. He's going to make the team. There's no question. Because he talks to the coaches all the time.
Sure,
and he said, Clement's going to make the team. And he said, and this is one thing that I had noticed already. He said, you never see him make the same mistake twice.
Wow.
Oh,
which
wow.
is which for a first year player, I mean, you could give him no higher compliment,
right?
You know, the coach corrects you one time, that's it. He gets it. He's got it, and you never have to correct him more than once. Coaches love that kind of player.
We've brought it up before, just the series of unlikely events that had to occur for him to even be in the role that he was placed in by the end of the season, being the receiving back on the Eagles. You know, Darren Sproles went down. Donnell Pumphrey, they had huge hopes for him. Wendell Smallwood as well. Huge hopes. They thought he would be the guy who could kind of do a little of everything. Corey Clement, when he was coming out of Wisconsin, he had, you know, over 300 carries his senior year. People looked at him as a, you know, sort of pedestrian, you know, 4.4 yards per carry back at a Big Ten school that just wasn't dynamic. So we know he can do that. He can carry the load. Yet, by the end of the season, his skills in the receiving game were so prodigious.
Yeah, totally.
He became like the go-to guy. Like, he became Darren Sproles in our offense, which is incredible on several fronts.
Many levels, yeah.
But when you talk about a guy who doesn't make the same mistake twice, the receiving game for a back in the NFL is the most demanding in terms of knowledge, of understanding of what a defense is trying to do coverage-wise and front-wise, because you have to consider pass protection first every time you're in there. And when you've got, you know, quarterbacks that mean as much as they do nowadays, no coach is going to have faith in a young guy going out there if there's any risk of him messing up, of him letting, you know, a free runner come in and get a hit on the quarterback. He, and this is just further reinforcing the fact that this guy can do everything. I found that so surprising. How often do you see a rookie running back who is depended upon more than any other back in the backfield? I mean, they didn't trust LeGarrette Blount
right.
in passing situations.
No.
You know, Jay Ajayi, same thing. They said, you know, hey, he's getting better at it, but he worked hard this past offseason. He's just not quite there yet. Corey Clement was the guy that they knew they could count on.
That's impressive.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. Well, I mean, if you just go and his role kept expanding as the season went on. And then you got to the end of the year in the biggest games. I mean, that was when he was asked to do the most. And I thought it was amazing. I mean, if you look just at the numbers, I mean, he had 100 receiving yards in a Super Bowl.
It's incredible.
100 receiving yards. I don't know if people realize that. I mean, they remember the catch for the touchdown, which was a great throw and a great catch. Beautiful play all the way around. But in the whole history of the Super Bowl, and there have been 52 of them now, there's only been two guys who were rookies playing in a Super Bowl that had 100 yards receiving and a touchdown in the game. Corey Clement was one. The other one was Torrey Holt, who's, wow. who was a first-round draft choice sure. And a blue-chip
yeah.
player.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're talking about a guy who is, I mean, he's become a far better player, I think even than the Eagles expected. Well, but give him credit now. And this sort of speaks to the advantage that sometimes if you get down to round 6-7 in the draft, you're better off not being drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pick your spot. I mean, Corey Clement, and because he wasn't drafted, everybody thinks that's a terrible thing, and I'm sure it was disappointing. But at that point, he's in a position where he can now shop around. And he said that I looked around, and yeah, the Philly thing and the local connection, that was part of it. But I also looked at the roster, and I thought I had a really good chance to make that team, as opposed to some of the other teams. So he took it. So it works out for them.
Listen,
it works out for him.
I love it. And I also love Ray. And look, who knows if he's going to be a star. I mean, we'll see where it ultimately goes. But I think he's going to be really good for a while. There's a lot of history in the NFL of low-round draft picks or undrafted running backs that do become stars.
Oh, sure.
Terrell Davis being one, Wilford being another.
There's perfect example.
There's a ton of them.
Yeah.
And so that gives me hope that, like, you know, because it's that position and there's history, that this guy can, I don't know, I am a big believer in that guy. Which, by the way, just for what it's worth, may make it harder for Jay Ajayi, even if he has a terrific season, to get the contract he wants. Because we all know the Eagles, with a lot of good players, are going to have to make some decisions on the contracts, much like how the cornerback position. I mean, the more you have good cornerbacks, the harder it's going to be for Ronald Darby to cash in. Or even someday, theoretically, Jalen Mills to cash in. Because if five or six different corners can flash, and we'll see if they do, then it changes the dynamic of how the team gets to strategize.
One last thing for me on Corey Clement. You know, talking about the people on the outside looking in, they didn't scrutinize the games the way we did. They didn't see the plays that Corey Clement made. You know, what game was it where he somehow got his feet down to make like an acrobatic catch in the
Redskins.
End zone? Redskins game. His build says running back, but the skills, the routes, the footwork, the hands are wide receiver. We saw that. I guarantee the guy, you know, right, Will Brinson or whatever his name is, didn't watch that play of the Redskins game, didn't watch the plays that he made with regularity.
Totally.
Where we were like, whoa, this kid has got it. This kid is a hybrid of the running back and the wide receiver when asked to be. And then we didn't even ask him to be the bell cow back. Someday we may.
I totally agree.
Someday when he gets that opportunity. This guy is going to be special, and everyone will finally figure it out.
By the way, if the Clement family is listening right now, they probably want the last 15 minutes on tape.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Let's go to the phones. 888-729-9494. Jetter Cameron, John Ritchie, and the Hall of Famer Ray Dittinger in studio. It's 94 WIP HD1 Philadelphia. Of course, we are live from the Tasty Cake Studios. To the phones we go, and Daryl in Newcastle. What's going on, Daryl?
Hey, thank you. Nice show today. Hey, wow, I get lucky. I'm on line with Ray Diddy today.
Yep.
Yeah, so you are.
Yeah, Ray, I met you back in May up at Delaware Park at the tackle thing. Remember, Ken, you and I asked for Howie Roseman to be the GM of the Sixers?
Yeah, I remember that conversation, yes.
Yeah, we need him now. oh, yeah, but yesterday's phone call. Please, don't let that Will guy get on the rail station no more. He must be from Dallas. I don't know what. Maybe he was drinking out Ike juice or something. For him to think that we don't got a chance, we're not going to make the playoffs. There's something wrong with him.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Awesome.
It was a weird call.
Makes no sense. Hello?
Go ahead, Daryl. We're with you, man.
Now, I got a question. Before I get to my duel, who's going to be the kicker this year? Sturgis or Elliott, or are they going to give them both a shot?
I think it's up in the air and they both get a shot.
Well, how about this? Can we use them both? Let Sturgis kick anything 40 yards and under, and Elliott 40 yards to 70 yards.
Yeah, but you're carrying two kickers now.
I think you might want to check. I think Sturgis is signed.
Oh, elsewhere?
Sturgis signed with
I'm pretty sure Elliott's the guy.
Let me amend my answer. Elliott is the guy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, let me get to my door.
I'm glad that I cleared that up.
Chargers. Sturgis is signed with the Chargers.
Oh, they need a kicker bad anyway last year. Okay, my duel is Brady versus Manning.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that. Brady and Manning. That's a good answer. All right, Ray, so we're talking today on this anniversary day of, literally a duel as most famous duel of all, the actual duel.
Oh, is this Burr and Hamilton?
Yeah, this is Burr and Hamilton.
So today is the day?
That was today. They went across the river from New York to New Jersey. It was like literally, truly, let's take it outside. They took it outside, and one of them ended up dead, all right?
Yeah.
So most notable whether, and we kind of are putting all phrases and terms up, whether it's duel, showdown, feud, fight, and don't have to be sports, obviously, like anything. Like, what comes to mind for you for a famous showdown, duel, face off, or fight?
I don't think there's, in my experience, there's never been anything any close to the first Ali Frazier.
Been brought up today. I mean,
it's got to.
Yeah, it's got to.
Especially the first one, because there was so much mystery involved in it. I mean, no one knew what Ali was at that point. He had been out of the game for a while. And there was such mystique about Ali at that point. I mean, the idea that he couldn't be beat. And then there was Frazier, who was just this indomitable force of nature, you know, and it was, and the whole build up, the whole ramp up to it at Madison Square Garden. And oh my God, I mean, you know, you got Frank Sinatra at ringside taking pictures for Life magazine. I mean, that's how big it was. I mean, Frank Sinatra's got a press credential to this. I mean, you don't get much bigger than that. And I think, you know, Joe, you and I have talked about this. I went to see the closed circuit version of it at the Spectrum Live. And what shocked me at that night was I went in there expecting it to be a largely pro-Frazier crowd. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is Philadelphia, right?
Yep.
It was not. At the start of the fight, I'm telling you, it was a pro-Ali crowd. Now, by the end of the night, it had kind of swung around a little bit, and it was sort of, you could almost say 50-50. But I remember being surprised at the beginning and the introductions and at the very start, it was clearly a pro-Ali crowd. But Ali represented so much more to so many people. I mean, his whole fight against the Vietnam War and his whole activism. I mean, he had taken on a scope beyond just the sports. And there were a whole lot of people that were riding on his coattails that night. And that's the one that I'll always remember.
Yeah, that's
Ali Frazier won.
That's a big one. All right, hit us up with other duels. And again, don't have to just be for, like, I give you one, Ray, in 888-729-9494. This is more of a rivalry, if you will. They didn't get along very well. And this is Philadelphia and Philadelphia. A lot of people don't know, but the Franklin family and the Penn family, Ben Franklin and William Penn's descendants, were not fans of each other at all.
Really?
Because Ben Franklin was alive and thriving when William Penn's, I think it was his sons. I don't think it was the grandsons. I think it was the sons. And so a lot of people, because, you know, we think of Philadelphia and the two most famous, you know, people from yesteryear in Philadelphia history is Ben Franklin and William Penn. I mean, you know, founder of Pennsylvania and the guy that was the man in Philadelphia. And the Franklins and Penns were not fans of each other.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. 888-729-9494. Let's talk to Matt in Delaware. Matt, you're on WIP.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
We're great.
Good.
How
Matt?
Are you?
I'm doing fine. Ray, it is a pleasure and an honor to be able to speak with you, sir.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
I watch every post game just to hear what you have to say. I love your notes.
Well, thank you.
I was originally going to talk about the Phillies, but now we're on the Eagles, and I had to jump straight to the greatest duel of all time, Belichick and Peterson, Super Bowl 52.
One-sided duel that it was.
Well, then you also have Nick Foles and Tom Brady.
I love
that
it.
That is David versus Goliath, you've ever heard that.
That's good stuff, man.
I mean, I would. That's something I'm going to remember my entire life.
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone could ever forget that, but with the Eagles this year, I mean, everyone considers them an underdog. Everyone considers them to be less likely to succeed, but it's a stronger team. You have every single player that was injured coming back. You have motivation. You have everything lining up. And the critics, I don't think they like Philadelphia. I mean, they discount the Phillies. They discount the Sixers. They discount the Flyers. But I think that, you know, with all the players – and the motivation and the underdog experience, that it's going to be a great year. And Ray, if you have a chance, call Peterson, give him some notes.
You know, Ray, you have a distinction of two things that are very unusual. You've made the pregnant pause on radio poignant. You have. No, you have. Because
Glenn points that out weekly.
It's true because we know pearls of wisdom are about to come from your mouth and your mind. So when you have the pause, something poignant is about to be said. That's number one. And you are the only person in the history of television. Like Tony Soprano made breathing interesting. He'd be mad and you could hear him breathe.
That's true.
He was the most interesting breather in the history of television, Tony Soprano, right?
I'd never thought about that, but yeah, you're correct.
It's true. I mean, it was compelling just to watch the guy breathe because you could feel his annoyance in the midst of his breathing. Ray, you are the only person that has ever made not even paying attention to the camera on television and simply looking down at your own notes. And not like a newscaster that's, you know, where they shuffle the pages and it's all nonsense. It's like the end of a newscast and they shuffle them while they're still on camera for like 3 seconds. And it's like, why are you shuffling them? The newscast is over. You're not speaking anymore. Stop this public posturing of shuffling your papers. But no, Ray, you look straight down and you'll do it for 20, 30 straight seconds like it's nothing. And it's fascinating to watch.
So I've heard that. I've heard you're not the first one that's brought that up. But I think people have to understand what happens at the end of the game. The way things work at Comcast SportsNet or NBC Sports Philadelphia now is when the game ends, the idea is as soon as the game ends, they come right to us. Mm-hmm. So,
by the way, I'm ticked when there's a 4 second delay. I'm like, cut this poker off.
I know.
I want to hear Ray.
It's hard to get out of those poker games. That's pretty riveting stuff. But they got it. The idea is they're supposed to go straight from the end of the game to us. And so, I mean, I've been taking play-by-play and doing all my record-keeping all throughout the game. And so I've got a lot of stuff to figure out and add up and calculate and compute before I can actually start talking on the show. So I only have a matter of seconds to do it. So I'm literally going through all the third down conversions, all the red zone percentages, all the stuff that I need to talk about. I need to kind of quantify it and verify it before we go on the air. So, yeah, I'm real busy when we come on the air. So everybody else is getting, you know, they're all locking in on the camera and fixing their tie. And, you know, Vaughn Hebron would be fixing his earrings and all that kind of stuff. And I have really important business to be transacting.
Well, I'll tell you what, I give you and them, Ray, for letting you do that, because there's a lot of, you know, people that would say don't do that, you know, boss type people. Mm-hmm. I give them credit for letting you do that and you doing it because, like, to me, it's like watching Barkley and Inside the NBA. It's real. It's real. Like, Charles is going to say wacky stuff, and sometimes he's just going to get up, and you don't know what he's doing. And he might say, you know what? This game tonight stinks. Why do we have this game on TNT tonight? But you appreciate as a fan, especially over the long haul, that you believe what Barkley said. It's the same thing. I like the fact that it's just you being you, and you do your thing, and we get to see kind of behind the curtain on TV. I think it's pretty cool. Jared Cameron, John Ritchie, Ray Dettinger, phone calls up ahead, and time's yours at 1:45. It's all on the table, 94 WIP.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Auto Parts.